Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, 11 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Nkunza from Sanlam. Jobs data, touch on that. We've got inflation later. We've got earnings season starting. Lots happening offshore. And of course, Musk didn't buy Twitter or isn't going to. We're talking to Flagship Asset Management on what they call the dirty little secret in South African equities. Turns out we're all about China. Jason Lightfoot from Future Growth, Reg 28. It's allowing 45% offshore. It's also now allowing 45% into infrastructure. They argue infrastructure is badly defined. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb, following up on the article last week in Business Day. Joburg to Cape Town flights spike to 6,000 rand return if you can find one. Most flights for this week completely sold out. Comair Going took 40% of capacity, so yep, prices are high. Business Day, embattled municipalities need 54 billion ZAR to recover, says Rating Africa analysts. Morning markets, US was mixed, S&P down 0.08%, it was 3 points, Nasdaq up 0.1%, Asia mixed with Sydney off almost 1%, and Tokyo up almost 1%, commodities mostly green, gold, $1,740, Brent, $106.25, platinum, $877, palladium, $2,109, rand, $16.95, top 40 opening call about 550 points to the red, that's 0.9% down, that has 10 cent trades off 3% lower in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunz, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam. Nick, appreciate the early morning. That U.S. job starter on Friday, I mean, it's a chuckle because it just continues to be, frankly, really strong. Unemployment really good, and the job starter just not worried at all.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I actually saw a commentary along those lines saying it basically makes a mockery of recession talks in the U.S. because, as you said, those jobless numbers were absolutely cracking. 370,000 jobs paid on farm payrolls in June. Unemployment steady, 3.6%. I mean, the U.S. bond yields also behaving themselves. So all in all, the U.S., the world's biggest economy, still, by all intents and purposes, for the month of June, which was only 2 weeks ago, ticking along very nicely.
Yeah, and then later this week, we get June inflation. Expected is 8.8%, which, if that happens, will be the highest since the early 80s. But, I mean, the two are, in a sense, contradictory, but I suppose you can have, and maybe, I suppose, a strong labor market is perhaps inflationary because labor suddenly has power.
It is, and if you look at actually, if you drill down into those labor numbers as well, I mean, wage inflation ticking up for 3-4 months in a row as well. So that does sort of agree with your argument there. But then the other flip side of it is, we've actually seen everything that's caused this inflation, all of a sudden has fallen on a heap. I mean, oil briefly under $100 last week. Copper, iron ore prices down where they are. I mean, iron ore is sitting, as we know, at the lowest level so far this year. So there is that sort of argument to come in that the market forward-looking is now, dare we say it, pricing in some form of a recession, which I think is a little bit extreme, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I take your point. A lot of that inflation is going to just sort of work its way out of the process. We've also got Q2 earnings kicking off on Thursday. Consensus seems to be earnings growth of just over 4%. Again, not a bad number.
Yeah, it is, and I think I'm looking forward to earnings season actually because it gives us a little bit more depth on how to position ourselves, because this rampant dollar, I think, is going to knock some of these U.S. earnings. I mean, I've seen that's sort of coming through now too. Just keep an eye on the earnings that have a dollar base to them. But kicking off this week, we've got J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, all coming out. They all should give a good indication of where U.S. earnings are. And don't forget also in a rising interest rate environment, which is happening now in the U.S., these banks do tend to do reasonably well as that spread widens. So looking forward to that this week.
I remember there's a website which actually tracks how many of the conference calls mention dollar strength after results. I need to go find it because I think we're going to see a lot of that. The loss perhaps is Elon Musk bailing on Twitter. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I'd never thought he was going to do it. He seemed to more than just be trolling planet Earth with his $200+ billion.
Yeah, I mean, that soap opera continues. But I get the feeling we've got a bored billionaire that doesn't quite know what to do with himself every now and again, and Twitter is one of them. But this is going to go on. I see late last night or sometime yesterday that Twitter actually applied to one of the courts to basically enforce it going down. Look, I think the biggest problem you got there is what was well known as no due diligence. I mean, he just basically walked in an office. So I don't think he's got a leg to stand on, quite frankly. But yeah, keep us entertained for the next couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Yeah, and of course a $1 billion break fee, and it's going to end up in court in Delaware. And Delaware is quite very, very kind, I suppose we could use the phrase, to corporate. So leave that there. Nkunza, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. And it's our question today on our poll on LinkedIn and Twitter. Earnings season's kicking off, 4% expected. Do you think that will be enough? Do you think it'll perhaps go higher, or are we going to see a miss? I think one of the big questions is going to be that shift. We've had supply issues, but now are we starting to see demand issues?
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chilling now with Peter Hundersmark. He is Portfolio Manager at Flagship Asset Management. Peter, appreciate the early morning time. And note that you put out towards the end of last week, and you called it the dirty little secret of South African equities. And there are a couple of charts that really sort of stand out. And of course, the first one you put out there is that, quite simply, in rands, the JSE share has underperformed the sort of global markets. I mean, it has not been a great decade, notwithstanding we've done okay in the last couple of years sort of post-pandemic.
Yeah, I think, how are you, Simon? So I think the question we set out to answer was really, you know, sort of deconstruct where our returns are coming from, because, you know, we've seen the last few years JSE has popped its head up again, and you know, investors had a very rough time, you know, the 5 years prior to 2019, 2020. So we thought, you know, let's have a look and see where the returns over 10 years are coming from. And the results are actually quite concerning from a diversity perspective. So it's not only are the returns low, but they're all really dependent on, you know, two areas, one being Naspers and one being resource stocks.
Yeah, I mean, so resources, and you make the point, over a decade, not so much, but certainly over the last 5 years, and Mark has done a right over the last 5 years, it's been lifted by those resources. And then, of course, the other really biggie has been Naspers, and Naspers has had a fairly horror 2022, although a decent bounce the last couple of weeks since the announcement of Prosus selling down Tencent, rebuying their own shares. But if it's been resources, and it's been Naspers driving our returns.
It has, and I think, you know, the next step then was to look at what do those two, you know, have in common, and the result is pretty clear. It's China. So China accounts for between 40% and 50% of all resource consumption across copper and bauxite, aluminium, and coal. And then obviously Naspers is largest and really only, let's say, discernible, valuable investment at this point is Tencent, which is, you know, a large Chinese business. So, you know, then you take the second derivative of that, and you will say, well, you know, China's been growing at 6.5% for the past 10 years. What does the world look like for the JSE when China's not growing at that rate? Yeah. You know, what happens to Naspers? What happens to to resources, which raises a big conundrum for, you know, for asset allocators, investors, to understand where their returns are coming from.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it basically says that over the last decade, our JSE, which we think is you know, independent and vibrant and everything else, has really been driven by China, and that then means that it comes back to the old story of it's around diversification. But I like the point that it's around digging down and actually understanding what's driving those returns, which is what you were doing, because it's one thing to say let's diversify, but if you were buying a general top 40 equity ETF, you weren't diversifying; you were buying China.
Exactly, and I think that's the key message of the article I was trying to get across, which is not that you can't make money off the JSE if you time things correctly with, you know, but I guess what I'm trying to say though is make sure you have a China view if you're investing on the JSE, because it's a big part of the Naspers process complex. It's a big part of the resources consumption. You know, obviously your listeners will know that it also affects our terms of trade, currency, and all of that. So just make sure you understand that you're making a very clear China bet when you invest just on the JSE. Individual counters will have individual investment cases. We all know that.
Yeah.
But just the JSE in general, you know, you're making a big China bet, and investors need to be cognizant of that, in my view. And obviously there are now great opportunities to diversify. So perhaps, you know, they could look a bit closer at those.
Yeah, and China's done great, and you know, world's second biggest economy, growing at a good pace and everything, but is maturing. They obviously, I mean, over the weekend again, more COVID cases coming up. Do they go back into hard lockdown? My sense is some China's nice, but there's a lot more planet out there as well.
I wouldn't agree. Couldn't agree more, Simon. I think you know, the Chinese economy has really been a big driver of global deflation for a while. It's as I said, it's grown 6.5% for over 10 years. You know, it's likely that it won't be able to reach those same numbers for the next 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's off a bigger base, so maybe you don't need as much growth, but the growth is going to become harder to come by, and I think there are substantial opportunities for equity investors, at least in Europe and the US and Japan, but you don't need to dig too deeply into China. Or at least not make it the main driver of your portfolio returns.
Yeah, lots of other opportunity. Japan catches my eye there, but we'll save that for another conversation. We'll leave that there. Peter Hundersmark, a portfolio manager at Flagship Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning insights.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jason Lightfoot, our portfolio manager at Future Growth. Jason, appreciate the early morning. National Treasury's finally gazetted the changes to Regulation 28. They will come into effect 3 January 2023. A lot of the headlines have been around the 45% offshore, and now you can go anywhere in the world, and we've chatted around that with other guests. But in particular, you folks at Future Growth, you've been focusing on the infrastructure opportunity, which you could use in the unlisted asset allowance, but there's now actually a provision for infrastructure, but you've got some concerns.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for having me. Yes, so pension funds or retirement funds could previously invest into infrastructure opportunities, you know, either through debt funds or through private equity, through the previous 35% allowance.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was never a hindrance in that regard, but I think what National Treasury has done is trying to create more awareness around the infrastructure class, and therefore creating a so-called carve-out by firstly defining or creating a definition of infrastructure, and therefore applying a overall limit to infrastructure assets. So I think our overall concern has really been around the so-called broadness of the definition. I mean, initially, when it first came out in March 2021, it was very narrow, focused primarily on so-called so-called public infrastructure, whereas we pushed forward and said, well, you know, obviously the private sector does a whole lot more, you know, so let's obviously include the private sector infrastructure opportunities as well. So therefore, what they had done is created this very broad definition, which in its own right is great, but it's really, in essence, too broad without the existence of any sort of guiding principles to really tell the market what counts as infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, we saw data recently, I think it was AFRIMAT Construction Index, which shows that on construction, which is just a part of infrastructure, construction is happening by private, not public. And your concern is, as you say, that the broadness of it, suddenly, you know, MTN and Vodacom might actually end up as infrastructure, and they, of course, would be part of your 45%, and that creates some significant challenges for pension fund managers.
Very, very much so, because the concern being is that, you know, you already have some big pension funds that already have been investing in infrastructure for many years, and by having a very broad definition without guiding principles, those pension funds might quickly bump into those limits, which obviously has the unintended consequence of not, you know, ending up or giving the final result of investing in true infrastructure opportunities like being, you know, renewable energy, toll roads, for example, or harbors and ports.
As I said, this has been gazetted and comes into effect in January. Is there still opportunity for conversation? I mean, legislation can obviously change over time. Your sense from Treasury, are they happy or are they open to more conversation?
Look, I mean, there were two rounds of public comments which went through, and I think the market is fairly vociferous around this concern and this unintended consequence. And I think through the articles that I've written, hopefully it'll touch base and result in some sort of guiding principles being released in terms of what the actual intention is.
A last question. I mean, the one point, and we talk infrastructure often on this show. It's a hugely important asset class. It's hugely important for the economy. There is a giant shortfall over the next couple of decades, and you guys at Future Growth have put it at sort of 1.8 trillion. These are massive numbers.
Yeah, that's a massive amount, and that's the expectation over the next 10 to 15 years. Of course, the bulk of that is made up of renewable energy opportunities. Given the reworked Integrated Resource Plan of 2019, there's obviously a much bigger reliance on alternative energy solutions. So that makes up about 1.4 trillion rand of that number. But I think the overall concern really for us is that, you know, even if we look at the numbers, it's a big amount, and there's definitely appetite to fund it, but a lot of those opportunities aren't bankable. They're already in their initial cycles of project life cycles. So really a lot needs to be done to get those deals or opportunities up to a stage where the capital market can play a real role and really fund bankable opportunities, which they aren't really at that stage right at this moment.
I take that point. And I know that from mining, it's a feasibility study, and it's the infrastructure needs it as well. They need to get to that point. Jason Lightfoot, Portfolio Manager at Future Growth, appreciate the early morning.
Crypto prices may be crashing, but crypto arbitrage remains relatively unaffected. In fact, the returns have even improved slightly. How do you account for this? Well, arbitrage involves buying cryptos on one exchange and selling them on another for a higher price. We will separate fact from fiction on crypto arbitrage and decide if it has any place in an alternative investment strategy. Join me, Kieran Ryan, on 13 July at 11 a.m. as I discuss these issues with Future Forex CEO Harry Scherzer, Duya co-founder Kyle Dowie, and Currency Hub co-founder Andrew Ludwig. This session will be live streamed on MoneyWeb.co.za and the MoneyWeb YouTube and LinkedIn pages.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
That's it for today. On Friday, we were chatting with Michael Field, our COO from Fed Group, talking around fees when we're investing. We've seen them coming down over the last couple of decades. The question we asked you on our poll was, how important are fees when you're selecting an investment? Two-thirds of you said massively important. About a quarter of you said not the only concern that you have and the only issue. And then that's a totally fair point. A few percentage points, I think about 4% or so of folks who had their say, were saying, nope, fees don't matter at all. If you're going to get the return, don't worry about the fees. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website to the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Tetzo, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.